One Hebrew word has captured the imagination of singer and songwriter Michael Card.
I realized that was the gospel. Jesus comes to me and he says, Mike, you're wrong, and I'm going to be on your side. You don't have to be right for me to love you and die for you. And I think that's hesed, when the person from whom I have a right to expect nothing gives me everything.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, author and musician Michael Card returns to talk about an important word that's difficult to translate into English. The word is hesed, and you'll find out what it means straight ahead.
Well, it's going to be a great rebroadcast from 1 year ago when we had Michael Card in the studio in Nashville. We talked about the work that he's done researching and writing about hesed. And if you go to fivelovelanguages.com, you'll see our featured resource, Inexpressible, Hesed and the Mystery of God's Loving Kindness. Again, go to fivelovelanguages.com. As we began the conversation last year, I told Gary I was excited that he and Michael were getting together and that we were having this discussion on Easter weekend.
It's a great weekend to be discussing the word hesed. And I'm ready to find out more about why you think this is so important, Chris, because I tend to agree with you.
Well, you know what? You know this word. You've written about this word in some of your books, right?
I did. You know, in the book, Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade, the book we wrote for caregivers of dementia patients, those folks who walk that long journey, they know what hesed love is. Or let me say, if they do know what hesed means, then they're going to be better caregivers.
Yes. Michael Card's an award-winning musician, performing artist. He travels to Israel, leads tours there. He's earned a master's degree in biblical studies from Western Kentucky University under Dr. William Lane. He's written Scribbling in the Sand, A Fragile Stone, the Biblical Imagination series on the Four Gospels, and others. His latest is Inexpressible, which I think should have been titled Hesed, but who am I? You can find it at fivelovelanguages.com.
Well, Michael, welcome back to Building Relationships.
Thank you, Dr. Chapman.
So you wrote a whole book about one little Hebrew word.
Yeah.
That has only three letters in it in Hebrew. Tell us about your journey. How did this happen?
That's sort of crazy, you can become so preoccupied with one word. It started about 10 years ago when I was working on the laments of the Old Testament, and I learned that all of the laments, except one, Psalm 88 is the only exception, all of the laments transition from lament to praise, and three of the most important laments transitioned at this word, hesed. And I had studied Hebrew. I thought, you know, I should at least be familiar with a word that was so important, and I wasn't. So that's how I got onto it. It's as if David or Jeremiah or whoever the lamenter is, they run out of words except for this one word, and it turns their lament into praise. It's an absolutely fascinating word.
So you've been friends with this word for at least 10 years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Why don't you give us a working definition of the word hesed?
That's the first problem. I'm looking at the list right here. In six different English translations, this word is translated 169 different ways. King James translates it 14 different ways. Eugene Peterson wins the prize. In his message, he translated it 57 different ways, this one word. So it's love, loving kindness, merciful love, steadfast love, faithfulness, grace, kindness, devotion, loyalty, faithfulness. It goes on and on and on. And so in the end, there's not really one definition. And that was the first thing I had to learn, because I thought, well, I'll do what no one else has done. I will come up with the definitive definition. And then I learned that words don't work that way. And we talk about what's the literal meaning of this word. Well, words don't have literal meaning. They get their meaning from the context. So I think what happens is this word appears in so many different contexts. Sometimes it just means to do me a favor. And then in Exodus 34, which I think is the most important passage, it's a word that God uses to define himself. But the fact that you can't do it doesn't mean that I didn't try. So my working definition is it's when the person from whom I have a right to expect nothing gives me everything. Mm. So I think when you're talking about caregivers, I think that's interesting. Yeah. you're a person who, from the world's point of view, really has no value anymore. You feel like you have no right to expect anything. But what do you get? You get kindness and over-the-top love and gentleness and all those kind of things.
I guess that explains the title of the book.
Yes.
Inexpressible.
Yes.
But we're going to try to express it anyway.
Sure, right. Well, I wanted to call it Hesed too, Chris, but I got overruled.
Why do you call Hesed the greatest sacramental word in the Hebrew Bible?
Well, that came from one of the lexicons. So I didn't come up with that statement. Someone else, I think Bruce Waalke, that's something that Dr. Waalke said. And I think what he means is in terms of holiness, in terms of a word that represents what the sacraments represent, the holiness of God, the provision of God, the character of God. He and I had a conversation years ago, and he says he didn't say this, but I clearly remember him saying it, that it was the defining characteristic of God. And I held on to that. And actually, that's what got me so interested in this word, is to hear someone like Bruce Waalke say something like that about a word. So I think that's what he meant in terms of holiness. And from a linguistic standpoint, in terms of range of meaning, I think it has the greatest range of meaning of any Hebrew word, maybe any word in any language.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know how many times the word is used in the Old Testament?
Yeah. Yeah, 248 times. A couple of those times, it's someone's name. So it's used as a name maybe two or three times.
Boy, wouldn't that be prophetic if your parents named you Hesed?
Well, every now and in Israel, I'll meet someone whose name's Hesed, which is pretty cool.
Huh, yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Exodus chapter 34 as being one of the places, I think you said, is where it's used to express the name of God or character of God.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most significant passage. It's the second time after he broke the first set of commandments, when Moses goes back up the mountain and God covers him with his hand and puts him in the cleft of the rock and basically describes himself to Moses. And the first word the first word is the word compassionate, racham. In Hebrew, God is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and full of, and then comes the word hesed. And then the next sentence, God says, I show hesed to thousands. So he uses the word twice in defining himself to Moses.
Yeah, interesting.
That's huge.
Where does the word first appear in the Bible?
The first appearance is one of those kind of common appearances, and it's in Genesis 19:19, and Lot basically says, God, you've done this favor for me. You've shown me, your kindness. And so now I really don't want to go to the mountains. Let me go to the city. So in the first occurrence, it sort of is like a favor. God, you've shown me this your favor in the past. Now do me a favor and don't make me go to the mountains.
Yeah. Why do you think the word is so hard to translate? Because you were sharing earlier some of the ways it's translated in different versions of the scriptures.
Well, I think if you understand that words get their meaning from context, I'll ask people, what does the word key mean? And the truth is, you don't know what the word means until I tell you the context. Is it the thing I opened the door with? Is it the key to the song? Is it the key idea? The context determines what the meaning is. And so given that, in those 248 occurrences in the Hebrew Bible, it happens in all sorts of different contexts, again, from the most common occurrence to God defining himself and basically everything in between. In Proverbs, is it Proverbs or Leviticus, it's even translated disgrace. Or shameful thing, but words do that, don't they? Words. What does the word cleave mean? It means to stick two things together. It means to cut two things apart. So, Hesed even does that. So I think that's why it's so many different contexts that it appears in.
Oh, I've been waiting for this. I really wanted Michael Card and Dr. Gary Chapman to talk together about this one little Hebrew word. And it's really interesting that we're doing this on Easter weekend, you know, between the crucifixion and the resurrection, because I believe Jesus is Hesed in the flesh. Mm-hmm. And listen now as we have this conversation with Michael Card. You don't want us to become preoccupied, though, with just one word. This is not a myopic, you know, get on one word and learn everything you can about it. There's a door that you're trying to open for us with this.
Yeah, I think that's Hesed is a door. It's a world. So you shouldn't like just tattoo it on yourself and become myopic about this one word. It means everything. I think because of the range of meaning is so great. I think an idea like the five love languages. I really think that and I want to say this. You tell me, Dr. Chapman, if I could say this or not. But I really feel like Hesed connects back to all of those in the Hebrew Bible. Mercy comes from Hesed, and grace comes from Hesed, and kindness comes from Hesed. It's not just that word means all those things, but because God is a God of Hesed, He's kind and He's merciful and He's slow to anger. The Bible says, and He won't leave the guilty unpunished because He's a God of Hesed. So even His justice is connected to this. But how do you respond to that all those things come out of Hesed? Do the five love languages come from Hesed?
No, I can see that. Yeah, because all of these are a choice. All of these languages are a choice. And you can have information on what would make your spouse or someone else feel loved, but you choose to do it. And that's from the heart. Do you have that attitude? I want to build up people. I want to help people. I want to meet a need here. I think you're exactly right.
Even when I get nothing, especially when I get nothing for doing it.
Yeah, and that's why, often, Michael, in a very difficult marriage where a spouse will not come for counseling, they won't read a book on marriage, they won't even talk about us, I give the other person, a challenge. Would you be willing, with God's help, to speak your spouse's primary love language at least once a week for 6 months, no matter how they treat you? And let's just see what happens. And it's not that I can guarantee that within 6 months the other person will respond, but I'm saying this is the most powerful influence you can have on somebody, is to love them when they don't deserve to be loved.
Well, and that's what the cross means, right? While we were yet sinners, Jesus died for us. One of the most life-changing things that was ever said to me as a young man in church, there was a deacon in our church. I got in big trouble for doing something. I got in trouble a lot. And this deacon I'm crying. I've been busted. I'm about 7 years old. And he gets in my face and he says, Mike, I want to tell you something. What you did was wrong. It was really wrong. And I want you to know I'm on your side. And I, what? But I realized as an older person, that was the gospel. Jesus comes to me and he says, Mike, you're wrong. And I'm going to be on your side. You don't have to be right for me to love you and die for you. And I think that's Hesed, when the person from whom I have a right to expect nothing gives me everything.
You give other examples of how this word relates to everyday life, or sometimes in the news we hear things. And what you just gave is one example. Are there other examples that just jump to your mind?
I think my favorite is Keisha Thomas in 1996 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. There was a white supremacy, KKK was having a rally, and there were a group of protesters off to the side, a group of African Americans, and one of the KKK guys wandered through by mistake that group, and they started pounding on this guy. He was already on the ground. Actually, people were kicking him, and Keisha, she said she felt an angel pick her up and put her on top of this guy, but she basically threw her body on top of this man and saved his life. There was a photographer there. He took a picture, and it was Time Life's picture of the year for 1996. Wow. This black woman protecting a white supremacist who, has swastikas, tattooed on his arm and all that kind of stuff. And I look at that, I see that picture, and I go, okay, that guy has no right to expect anything from her. But what does he get? He gets everything. And that to me was a beautiful example. And I think one of the exciting things is once you sort of develop an instinct for this, you start looking for it and you see it, and it's it warms your heart.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You also said that a woman, Dinah, named Dinah, showed you personally Hesed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite stories. I'll try to make this short. You know, something like what Keisha did was huge. Saving someone's life is huge. But the other thing about Hesed, and I think your caregiver example is probably a good example, Hesed can be shown in very small ways. I think when Jesus has a cup of cold water, offering someone a cup of cold water, I think that could be an act of Hesed. Mm-hmm. And I was visiting a black church here in Franklin, Tennessee. It was 96, I think. Oh, gee, I just realized the same year that Keisha was protecting that man. 95 or 96. Anyway, about 200 member church. I was the only white person in the church. Mm-hmm. And I sat in the only empty seat in the back of the church. And when the sermon started, the woman, who I hadn't even spoken to, reached over and grabbed my hand. And at first I kind of freaked, but then I thought, well, I guess this is just what black people do in their churches. They must hold hands. So I look around and nobody else is holding hands. After the service was over, she stood, she's a big woman. She stood and said, you know, we're really glad you were here. You come back anytime. We were glad to have you here. And I come to find out her name was Dinah Smith. I knew her husband, actually, Bob. Bob was a person who met with our prayer group. So I knew her husband anyway. I knew the pastor of the church. He prayed with us too. And it wasn't until I started studying Hesed, I looked back and I realized I had no right to expect anything from her. What sort of associations should she have had of this white guy coming into her space, the kind of the only safe space that she really has, right, is church. And here I am, you know. But now I have a word for it. Incredible kindness. Okay, that was loving kindness is one of the most popular translations of the word. 1535, Miles Coverdale invented that word to try to translate the word Hesed. And that's what I experienced. And it changed my life. But it was a small thing. She just held my hand.
If we could get Hesed into the lives of the black and the white and all the other racial people in our country, we would have a solution, right?
I think so. And the good news is you see it all the time. You know, it's not what the news portrays, but I mean, I live in a town that's still, Sunday is still the most segregated hour of the church hour, still the most segregated hour of the week. Yeah. And but the connections that are being made, there really is a revival going on in our town in terms of reconciliation. And it all has to do with these small things. I mean, we share meals together. We go to dumb movies together. I have coffee, you know, with a couple of friends, you know, on a regular basis. And that's what it's going to take. But it looks like a little small thing, but it's a huge thing. So, back to your example, the caregiver, you know, wiping someone's chin after they've eaten or changing their dirty sheets or whatever, that seems like such a meaningless thing. But if you stop and think about it, I really do think. What does Jesus do? Jesus washes their feet, and he says, "I'm going to show you the full extent of God's love." I think the miracle of Hesed is I can change someone's dirty sheets and show them the full extent of God's love. That's a miracle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, with the dementia patient, when they get near the end of the journey and they can have no response, you know, the cognitive abilities are gone. And yet these spouses and sometimes adult children, and obviously there are professional caregivers also, they're sometimes brought in. But there's nothing in return. You know, they can't reciprocate to you. Yeah. It's a one-way love. Yeah. But it's so encouraging, it has been to me, to see as I sit in small groups with patients like this, or caregivers like this. You know, one man, for example, his wife became just very horrible and lashing out at him and all kind of things. And he didn't know that she had a disease. And he actually left her. He said, "I'm not putting up with this." He left her. It was a year later she was diagnosed with the disease. And when he realized it was the disease and not her, he came back and took care of her the rest of her life.
Oh, wow.
So his first response wasn't good, but the second response was hesed, okay?
Yeah.
And there's almost that idea of second chance, Michael, of hesed giving you a second chance, right?
Oh, well, hesed gives you more chances you can imagine. I mean, I think that's Jesus and Peter. You know, how many times do I forgive my brother? Peter says seven times, and he's trying to impress Jesus with that number, by the way. And Jesus basically says, no, more times than you can imagine. And that's the nature of hesed. Yeah, it's always over the top. It's, finding the wounded person, binding his wounds, putting him on your donkey, taking him to the inn, paying his bill, and saying, I'm going to pay it when I come back. It's getting the ring and the robe and the shoes and the party for the prodigal. You know, it's always over the top. Yeah. Jesus talks about hesed all the time.
And the ultimate act, though, is what we remember happened on Good Friday.
Yes.
The embracing of that Jesus didn't have his life taken from him, he gave it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He had the authority to let it go, John says. Yep.
And on the cross prayed, Father, forgive them. They don't have a clue what they're doing.
Yeah, and I read that, Gary, every time I read that, I think, what are you talking about? They know exactly what they're doing, right?
Mm,
you know,
yeah,
and I think sometimes hesed looks naive to people. But I stand in front of the cross of Jesus and I say, I nailed you there. If I understand the way fallenness and all the rest were, okay, I nailed you there. The Romans didn't kill you. The Jews didn't kill you. I killed you.
Yeah.
And yet he gives me everything. You know, a second chance? No, more second chances you can possibly imagine. Because that's the nature of who he is.
Yeah.
When I think of Jesus on the cross, I nailed you there. I raised the cross. I nailed you. I'm the reason that you died.
Michael, we were talking about this word hesed, and not just in the New Testament, but the Old Testament. But, you know, a lot of people have the idea that in the Old Testament, God is a God of anger, you know, and judgment. In the New Testament, he's a God of love.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true, is it?
I don't think so. And I think this business of hesed, God's principal revelation of himself in the Hebrew Bible as being a God of loving kindness. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. He gets mad. But he's given every right to get mad.
Hmm.
What a lot of people don't realize, especially in the prophets, someone like Jeremiah, God has reached out for generations to people through the prophets, begged them to turn back, you know. Hmm. And so it's only that real stubborn disobedience, I think, that leads to God exercising his justice. But even that's an act of hesed. It's so that they can eventually go into the land and his ultimate will can be done. So yeah, I think it's a vast oversimplification to say, I don't believe in the Old Testament angry God. I believe in the loving God of the New Testament.
I think we sometimes have a hard time though, really kind of grappling with that, how God can be perfectly just and yet perfectly loving.
Yeah.
But there's something inside of us, even us as fallen creatures, that cries out for justice. Right?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, why not go to the place where God tells us who he is, which this passage, we referred to it two or three times, this Exodus 34, 6 and 7. God is telling Moses who he is. And the first part of the revelation has to do with his compassion, and the second part of the revelation has to do with justice. Let me just read it, if that's okay.
Yeah.
This is, Moses is in the cleft of the rock. He's come up the mountain to get this, the tablets re-inscribed, because he broke them. He got mad and broke them, so that Moses got mad. But in 6, verse 6, this 34, Exodus 34, 6, the Lord passed in front of him and proclaimed, and here it is, the Lord, the Lord, and that's the only time God ever says his name twice like that, is a compassionate, there's the word rakam, compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, and abounding in hesed and truth, maintaining hesed to 1,000 generations, forgiving iniquity, rebellion, and sin. So there's the heart of God right there. His heart is to forgive every sort of sin. There are three different words to describe the range of sin. But here's the second half of the revelation. But he will not leave the guilty unpunished, bringing the consequences of the father's sin on the children and grandchildren to the third and fourth generations. But the fact that God causes the children and the grandchildren to suffer the consequences of their father's sin, that's part of his mercy. And one of the best examples, I think, is when the Israelites refused to go into the promised land. That's going to happen just a few chapters later. And God will cause them to go into the wilderness. And so what happens? They're, for two generations, they're wandering in the wilderness. The children and the grandchildren experience the consequences of their father's sin. But what happens? They enter the promised land eventually, and they are a changed people. And so the fact, I mean, what if God didn't allow us to experience the consequence of sin? It would just be rampant. Yeah. But no, part of his mercy, part of his justice is he does not leave the guilty unpunished. But and I think ultimately this verse is what leads to the cross, because ultimately he's made this covenant with us that we do nothing but break. And so on the cross, he keeps the covenant that we never really kept. And he ultimately, you know, he ultimately brings punishment on his for the guilty on his innocent son, because he's a God of justice. But he's still a God of chesed. I think that's the big surprise of the Hebrew Bible. I would expect, you know, God to speak the universe into existence. I would expect him to be holy, but that he's kind, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Yeah, that's powerful. Yeah. And on this weekend, as we reflect upon the crucifixion, this word, you know, reverberates in our hearts. Mm. Michael, you may or may not know this answer to this question, but my background is anthropology. Did an undergrad and a master's degree in anthropology before I studied counseling and theology. I'm interested in other cultures. Is this idea of chesed found in other cultures?
Well, from a linguistic point of view, I can't tell you in anthropology or anything like that, but linguistically, there's not another word like chesed in any other language. It's a the scholars say it's a uniquely Hebrew word. Yeah. And now, so from that, I will derive, and this is me, this is the banjo player in Nashville making conclusions, but what I derive from that is it's a uniquely Hebrew word because God's revelation was unique to his people, He was a God of loving kindness. There are no hymns to the kindness of Molech or Baal or, you know, Vishnu or any other pagan god. That's one of the uniquenesses. And well, when Solomon dedicates the temple and he's worshiping God, one of the things he says is, "You're God of Hesed. There's no God like you." I think this is unique. But I would make that argument from a linguistic point of view.
Yeah, and that would be my guess as well.
Michael, in the chapter on an everlasting refrain, 1 Chronicles 16:34, give thanks to the Lord for He is good. His Hesed endures forever. You say, I think that this is the pivotal. I dog-eared this part and I started, and you write this. What are the implications for us today of God's chesed being everlasting and eternal? What kind of confidence might be born in our hearts and minds if we trusted that God's love, mercy, and kindness will never fail, never leave us in the lurch? What would happen to our deepest lingering fears if we could summon the audacity to believe this promise, a promise that obviously meant so much to Israel? And I read that and I thought, this is something that will call us to live differently. If we live receiving God's chesed, we have to live differently in this world.
It wouldn't be chesed if it wasn't eternal, if it was sort of a whim or something that could eventually wear away, that would completely change the character of it. And interesting to me, I mean, let's do a biblical run at this. When God gives Asaph and I think Ethan their job description, let me say it that way. When he gives them their job descriptions, and I think that's in 1 Kings 4, he says, this is what you're going to sing about, that the hesed of God endures forever, right? That's your job, right? So you look at Psalm 89, which is the only psalm we have of Ethan, and the first thing he says is, I will sing about the Lord's hesed forever. So if it's if it is eternal, then Ethan says, well, I'm going to sing about it forever. And it doesn't change. It's not seasonal like our love is, fickle like our love is. It's reliable. It's ultimately reliable.
You say that one of the fundamentals of Hesed is the concept of reciprocity. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's a huge idea, and it comes from, it's a little more mundane in the historical books. When the word Hesed starts popping up, it's usually connected to this idea of reciprocity, and that is that David and Jonathan are the classic examples. Their friendship is described as a friendship of that's based on Hesed. And again, so you think about that. David has no right to expect anything from Jonathan. Jonathan should have been king. Jonathan is Saul's son, not David.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What does David get from Jonathan? He gets everything. Not he doesn't just put up with David. He would do anything for David. And what happens is you have all these ideas, and it happens again and again in historical books, that if you are shown Hesed, it is really incumbent upon you to return Hesed. There are a couple of examples where even with Saul, I think there was a tribe that Saul had been kind to, the Kenites, and I think they let Saul come through their territory, and then at some point later on, the Israelites didn't return Hesed to them, and that was this huge violation. But you see it most clearly after Jonathan dies. David says, is there anyone in Jonathan's family left that I can show Hesed to? And that's the Mephibosheth story. Jonathan has this crippled son. And David, you know, basically shows him kindness, loving kindness. And so the way it works is, this is a big idea in the New Testament. Jesus says, you forgive as you have been forgiven. That's reciprocity. It's incumbent upon me. Why do I forgive my enemies? Enemy love is another word for Hesed. It's enemy love. So Jesus has this long discussion in Luke 6 about that we should love our enemies. And then he concludes that discussion with his definition, Jesus' definition of Hesed, and he says, because, why do you love your enemies? Because God is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. To the ungrateful and the wicked, he is kind. So why do I love my enemies? Because God loves his enemies.
Yeah.
That's me. See, so that's the reciprocity. That's sort of the ultimate expression of reciprocity. I forgive as I've been forgiven.
Yeah. But you don't forgive, you know, because you can get the cart before the horse. You don't forgive to earn forgiveness
No.
from God.
You
forgive out of the well that you have been forgiven, and it's like a natural response, right?
Right, right. Hesed is never given to give anything in return. Now, if I give you $1 million and you build a building and you put my name on the building, that's charity. And that's a good thing, you know, in the Hebrew world, charity is a good thing. It's not Hesed. But if I give you something, if I give you $1 million, you don't put my name on the building, that's Hesed. And Jesus teaches this, right? What does he say? When you give, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. When you pray, go to the inner rooms. And it's not so that, ultimately Jesus says the God who sees in secret will reward you openly, but you don't do it to be seen by men or to get their thanks. Otherwise it's not Hesed.
Well, Michael, let's focus on Jesus. It sounds like all that has happened is a prelude. All that we've been talking about, Old Testament, what we see of God there is a prelude. That Jesus will not only be the Word made flesh, but Hesed made flesh.
Yes. Well, and by the way, when John says that, the Word became flesh full of grace and truth, it's in Greek, but that's the same phrase that's in Exodus 34 where God says that he is full of hesed va'emet, grace and truth. So that there's a real link there with the Word becoming flesh and hesed.
And on the cross, we've talked a bit about that, but just again, what was happening at the cross?
One of the old ideas in theology was that because of covenants, God gave us Hesed, that Hesed came from covenants. And a wonderful scholar, Catherine Sankenfeld, wrote a little tiny book. It's like 90 pages, but basically it was a book that turned that view around, and she said, no, absolutely not. Because God is a God of Hesed, he makes covenants with us. So Hesed doesn't come from covenants. Covenants come from Hesed. And he makes these covenants with us, and we break them, but he keeps keeping them. And so I think what ultimately happens there on the cross is, because he is a God of Hesed, and he won't leave the guilty unpunished, right? He keeps he gives the sacrifice, provides the sacrifice of his own son. And it's the ultimate demonstration that God is a God of loving kindness and that he ultimately wants to be with us. I mean, what is the cross? The cross makes possible the fulfillment of the deepest desire of God. And what is that? He wants to be with us. Emmanuel, God with us. The climax of all scripture, in Revelation is when, you know, John's, I heard a loud voice from the throne that said, at last the dwelling of God is with men and women, and he will live with them. That's the deepest desire of God, and Jesus makes that possible on the cross.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, tomorrow we celebrate the resurrection of Christ, and Christians all over the world look back not to one who died and stayed dead, but one who rose from the dead. How does that fit in to all of this?
Well, I think it's the ultimate demonstration in the first place that it was all true. I think they're walking to Emmaus. You know, we had hoped, they said, you know, as they're looking down the ground, kind of all bets were off. We put everything in our belief in this man, and now he's dead, and we're done, right? The women go to the tomb to anoint a dead body. There's no one waiting outside the tomb to see if he's going to be raised from the dead. We're done. It's over. We had hoped, I think, is the perfect expression of it. But then what happens? He demonstrates his power. He demonstrates that this has all been true all along. Everything he said when he predicted that he would be raised from the dead, it's all true. And not only does it demonstrate that he's true, that it is true, it also lets into the world, you know, I think what someone like Paul would call resurrection power. And you and I are empowered by the resurrection, I think, specifically to show Hesed, to be kind. God shows his immense power through his kindness, okay? And he empowers you and me with this power that raises the dead so that we can do what? So that we can show the full extent of his love by offering a cup of cold water, by changing dirty sheets, by forgiving a spouse who's never asked us for forgiveness, that sort of thing.
Well, Michael, let me thank you for being with us today and discussing a word that many Christians are really kind of unaware of, but a word that is at the very heart of what God has done and is doing and will do. So thanks for being here on this weekend, celebrating with us the death of Christ, the resurrection of Christ, and our resurrected living. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on your program, and it's been great spending this time with you guys.
Well, what a meaningful conversation here on the day before Resurrection Sunday, and what an excellent resource. We have it linked at 5lovelanguages.com, Inexpressible, Hesed and the Mystery of God's Loving Kindness. Again, go to 5lovelanguages.com. Next week, if you've walked through the deep valley of losing a baby, or if you have someone you know who's grieving through a season of loss, join us for Candy McVicker's story. She'll share a lot of hope. A big thank you to our production team, Steve Wick, Janice Todd, Ryan McConaughey, and also thanks to Mike Powers at Moody Radio Nashville. And thank you for listening. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.